The BEA STEM, Global Competitiveness Conference, and the United States Army presents Why Hire Veterans and Transitioning Military Members, a professional development seminar. Featuring President and CEO of the Bones Theory Group, Michelle Jones. At present, there are thousands of service members transitioning out of the armed services every year. And this talented pool of job seekers looks for military-friendly companies that will put their hard-earned skills to good use. Employers can benefit from hiring veterans. Military personnel are often cross-trained in multiple skills and have experience in varied tasks and responsibilities. Veterans are disciplined team players, educated, professionals, self-starters, detail-oriented, and have a very strong work ethic that can bolster any employer's business. Without further ado, the BEA STEM Global Competitiveness Conference and United States Army presents Why Hire Veterans and Transitioning Military Members, featuring Michelle Jones.
Very respectful. You're looking at a person that's going to be flexible to change. You're looking at a person that's also is going to be able to communicate well, not only just in writing, but also in verbal skills, and also listening as well, and getting the job done no matter what. Another thing I would say is that as you're looking at a veteran, they don't understand the word can't do. They can do. They do it all the time. They don't understand the 9-to-5. They understand more of getting the job done, accomplishing the mission, no matter what the cost may be. And they also believe in influencing others to achieve their max potential and making sure that they work together as a team, be able to collaborate with each other, to work together and get the best product possible to make sure that they can come up with the best solution. As Sergeant Major was saying a few minutes ago, diversity is very, very important. It's not an option. It's essential to the organization, essential to all organizations, to make sure that we treat people with dignity and respect, and they understand that as one of the core values of the United States military.
So from my perspective, I've been out of the uniform for about 7 years now, totally. The veteran comes to the table with a work ethic. That work ethic includes that they really don't work to the time. You know, you go to some places and people come to work and they do their 8 hours and they're ready to go. Veterans don't know that and don't understand that 8-hour mindset. They're working to get the mission completed. They come with multiple skill sets to work at different levels within the organization. So from the time we come into the military until the time we leave, we go from what we call the skill sets 10 all the way up to 40, 50 level, which is high skill level. And then those are able for you to be able to work at the operational level and at the strategic level. So you have somebody that has a full package of understanding and better able to sit down and articulate and talk to the leadership of the organization on how best to get from point A to point B.
I know you alluded to your piece at the end, but what remarks would you like to make prior to that?
Yeah, I think what hasn't been said yet, but it's probably implied, is I think veterans, and many of you have probably served, so if I'm telling you things you already know about yourself, forgive me, but we have the ability to operate with a diverse group of people, and that's really important today. I mean, many of us have deployed to places that are pretty exotic, and you end up having to collaborate with people who were at one time on the other side, and then you're helping them to rebuild their country. So that's not only true with different ethnicities, but we have an understanding of culture and traditions. We know what to do and what not to do, and I think that's really important. Big challenges in corporations today is not diversity, but one of diversity and inclusion. And we've mastered the ability to work with a diverse group of people while including them in the decision making so they feel like they're part of the team. And then I think the other part of it is, look, companies that are big and large and really excelling, you got to have people working for you that are willing to deploy. Probably not a word you use in corporate America, but my experience with my friends who've only served in corporate America, like IBM. IBM stands for I've been moved. You work for a company like IBM, and if you're successful, like Rodney Atkins, you're going to move a lot. And veterans know how to do that. And they know how to do it with great efficiency while maintaining their effectiveness as a great team.
Just by show of hands, how many, I just want to make sure I know the audience that's sitting here, how many of you are here from companies that really want to understand the veteran piece or trying to hire veterans? So I'm going to stop and pause for a second, and I'm going to throw this question out to the panel, and then I'm going to ask you to please ask the question. So sometimes corporate America says, well, I really want to hire veterans, but I'm not sure what the first step is. Or we're getting veterans to apply, but we don't really understand what they're saying in their resume, per se. So what would your response be to that?
So I will give you some specific details with numbers and data and a solution in my remarks toward the end. But I think when you come to forums like this, Black Engineer of the Year, Society of American Military Engineers, Society of Human Resource Managers, if you're participating in professional organizations or this venue, I think a lot of you learn for the first time, like, oh my God, look at all the talent that there is right there. I mean, who knew? Who knew that you would have Coast Guard people, Navy people, Army people, Air Force people doing the things they do with the cloud, with CAD design? This morning you heard about this woman who, you know, took the Navy 2 years to design a ship until she came along and she did it in 19 hours. And she wasn't even able to attend school because she was a Black female at the time. And so she taught herself. It's just absolutely amazing the stories you hear, and you look at these people who are doing this, and a lot of them are veterans. And if you don't know what you don't know, and until you come to venues like this, and there's a lot of military folks attending, former and current, so keep doing that. You find good talent where good people come together. We've got the best companies here, and militaries included, for sure.
So I'd like to add, too, if you're not understanding the language that someone may be using in their resume, that there are a lot of veteran resource centers that you can actually go to get a better understanding. I told some of my panel members a story about I'm from New York City, and I went home, and somebody wanted to know what I did in my military career. And it's very hard to be very specific, but I broke it down from a grade structure. From the time you come in as a listed person, you go from E0 all the way up to E9. And then there's another branch, a piece that's a one officer from W1 to W5. And then you have the officers, which is O1 to O10, I mean, it's O10. So when you look at that structure in itself, it leads to telling you from each level you're moving up in the pecking order with more responsibilities. And we need to be able to understand what those responsibilities equate to as we transition into the private sector. So that's where the critical piece for you as hiring managers is to ask the next question. What does a company commander mean? What does a command sergeant major mean? And get that common dialogue together, because if you understand it, you can equate it back to something within your organization.
The one thing that I would say, I call it going back to elementary school and the process, and this is both for veterans that are applying for positions as well as those that are interested in hiring veterans and pulling out to a degree the who, what, when, where, how, and why. And what I mean by that is, who were you responsible for? So in asking those questions, for example, who were you responsible for? That could be a number. Okay, for example, in my position, responsible for 1.2 million soldiers and families. That's a quantifiable, but if you ask the question, who, how many, if you would, what levels, what was the outreach? In other words, just, okay, there were, you know, I'm responsible here, I've got people in 50 different countries, or, you know, states, 120 countries, so you get a scope. So asking the questions in that format sometimes can help you understand, or at least be able to quantify what this individual did. It could be the amount of equipment or money that they were responsible for. So it works both ways. It works both ways, and this is just a way to hire more, to really get down into what that individual person that you, I want to hire him, but I'm not really understanding what he or she was saying. Questions from the audience.
Oh, so I think there's a key component that might be missing from the motivation to hire veterans that you guys miss, at least for the National Labs perspective. I mean, one of the things that we try to find are people that are committed to the national security mission. And coming out of the military, that's something that we sort of already know they have. One of the challenges we have with veterans is, and I've had to deal with this within my own department. I have an ex-Marine who's probably one of the brightest people in my department, but he doesn't have the traditional education of a lot of the other people. So he has what I would call a PhD equivalent, but he's not a PhD. And so whenever we're trying to hire people, I had to go through a fair amount of hoops to convert him from a contractor to a staff member. And a lot of those were trying to relate his training that he got in the Marines to what an equivalent type of training he would get through a normal educational system. So I guess my first comment would be, you know, to help us, it'd be great to, encourage, and I know Mr. Johnson, you have connections to Georgia Tech, encourage these veterans or, you know, former military to go into graduate schools, get degrees, also encourage the places that are hiring, and maybe it's not so difficult at a, you know, within industry, but within the labs, you know, it's very difficult for us to compare the types of training and experience you get in the military with a graduate school, for example. And so that's on us to do. It's on us to be able to better articulate what it means to have that type of training and experience. And it comes through when you see them work, but it's often difficult to get into the door. And so I think that's on us to do a better job of that. But at the same time, I think trying to recruit veterans into graduate schools to pursue PhDs or master's level degrees, formally, would make it a lot easier for us to argue that they can compete with other people coming out of these high level school systems. So I don't know if that helps. So first of all, you know, commitment to national security mission is probably the biggest thing that I'm looking for from a staff recruit, and that's the distinguisher between us and say some of the other companies like Google, Amazon, IBM, Microsoft, the other people that are competing for our staff.
Okay, I'll take a shot. Again, I'm the rookie up here because I'm not in that position yet. But I would say I think most veterans are committed. I mean, especially those that have served 20 plus years. To me, if I'm sitting on the other side, I would say, hey, they were committed to the mission that they were doing for 20 years, or the mission they were doing for every assignment that they had. So I would think, you know, if it's national security mission and you hire, again, the right vet, I will almost bet you they will be committed to that mission that they are.
So from my, and anyone else would come, my take, bottom line is having the, not having, but there is a struggle or challenge that a person, that number one, we all know that's a given. However, where the pushback comes within the company is not having those advanced degrees.
So they clearly have the skill sets. And that comes through once you see them work, but it's getting in the door in the first place. I mean, that this staff member that I have, he took the long road to get into my department. He worked for 10 or 12 years as a contractor, and then I had to finally make a case to my management that he was worthy of being a staff member, even though he didn't have the same educational background of people that have PhDs, because we do a lot of research. And now that he's come in, he's become an outstanding contributor, and he's leading projects. He's leading he's writing proposals for research projects. He's outstanding, and I think a lot of it comes from that military background, that military experience. But it's difficult to for someone applying to a job, for example, it's difficult for someone to relay that experience into an equivalent amount of education, even though it's clearly there. So I'm just saying, I don't know how we fix this. I think part of this is our responsibility to be able to make sure we can recognize that talent and convince our management that it's worth taking a risk. But at the same time, I would also like to see those same type of people coming out of the military going into a graduate program, or at least getting an equivalent degree through the military training system, so that it makes it easier for us to make that justification to our management.
Yeah, so let me respond. This may be something that you don't know. So in the military, all the services, some of us are fortunate enough, while on active duty, I was selected to go teach math at West Point. In order to do that, I had to go to graduate school and get a degree. So I was a full-time active duty Army officer in graduate school at Georgia Tech. There are officers, some NCOs, get an opportunity to do this. So the NCO officer education, one officer education system supports this in all kinds of degrees. I think what we need to probably do a better job of is maybe figuring out a way to give more degrees from our military education system. So for example, a lot of the war colleges now give master's degrees. When a colonel goes through that experience, they leave with a master's degree. If you go to the engineer officer advanced course at Fort Leonard Wood, for example, I personally set up a program where every engineer officer can spend 6 more months at the University of Missouri-Rolla, now called Missouri Tech, and get an engineering degree. The MPs can get a law enforcement master's degree. The chemical corps officers can get a master's degree. So those programs are there. I think what the military has to do better is maybe embrace those people that want to go further in PhDs. And there is a program for people that want to be professors or in certain specialty fields in the Army, not in a branch, but operations research, for example. A lot of our operations research folks are PhD credentials folks. But as you said, we got to do a better job of educating our people on where the opportunities are in labs. Army Corps of Engineers has a bunch of labs, right? Sandy is a huge lab, right? John Hopkins has a lab. We just have to do a better job of telling our officers about those. And I think the beginning is, and I always tell veterans, I wasn't smart enough to do this, but now that it's happened to me, a veteran should never limit him or herself on what's possible. I mean, I've done things I didn't. There's no way I would have dreamed of doing any of the things I've done or I'm doing now. There's no way. I do not have a PhD. I'm a full professor at Georgia Tech. There are 7 professors of the practice, one for each school. I would have never gone to Georgia Tech and said, hey, I got skills, y'all need to hire me. They came after me, and I'm so glad to be there. But it's because of a reputation and staying connected to them and endowing scholarships and giving back.
So I would surmise we do on both sides of the house. We do have to do a better job in translating those where it becomes, instead of a worse task to get someone that clearly has those skills, to move them into those positions. But part of it, and I share this with you, having those entities that truly can speak to come in to an organization and actually go through, and this a lot of times coordinate with the human resources department to do a real training session, training/education/change in culture, because, and it is a cultural change, okay? You have to have A, B, C. And it's almost like a validation. You're credible enough to have this position based on the fact, not saying that this is always the case, but based on the fact that you do have this advanced degree. You know, ways to even encourage, okay, you're a veteran, you're coming on, we want you to come on. This is a program, we're going to let you on, and we're going to work with you to get that advanced degree. So it isn't always easy, especially when you're trying to change a culture, because what I'm hearing also is that you had to fight hard to get this brilliant person onto regular staff from contract. It's because there was not a full understanding of what this person brings to the table and why, basically, they should be given an opportunity, although they do not have these advanced degrees, which was, quite frankly, the way I'm hearing it, this was more like an anomaly, you know, that we're going to get this person in, where maybe the human resources has, it could be a small panel, it could be a large group from different pieces, and this is just one way. So one, bringing people in to train and educate, number two, developing a small panel that actually looks at candidates and discuss, you know, this is someone that we want to bring on, even though they don't have it. So it's different eyes on as well. That's another option. So these are options to, again, change the way that business is being done in terms of hiring. Looking at it from a different perspective and also bringing in some other eyes too. So, but it does take a commitment because it's not always easy. You know, it's easy to check the box. This thing got that, this thing got that. So then you know it. Okay. And then we're going to move
on. Yeah, I think the challenge is the equivalence of training from the academy, or not the academies, but through the services on, you know, how are those equivalent to, you know, the same type of degree program at a university? And that was the challenge that I had to overcome, because I had to argue that the training that they got while they were serving was roughly equivalent to the training that someone would get, you know, getting a master's degree. And the reason I had to make that argument is because we have hundreds of candidates, right, coming for these positions. And for me to make a solid argument for this person over these, you know, 100 other people, I had to argue that there was something discriminating in the talent this person had, but also that the education they had was equivalent. And so that was the part that was difficult for me to overcome. I eventually did, but it, you know, it took a fight. And it would be a lot, I think there are probably a lot of people that don't make it over that barrier because they don't have someone that's either knowledgeable enough about what they're good at. And the fact, again, this guy took the long road to get to where he is. He probably would have gotten there a lot faster if we had this equivalence for training.
Thank you. One more comment.
So in understanding what you're saying, maybe there's something that private sector can do to have an individual in the human resource department have a better understanding of what the training that military people go, how it actually correlates back to the civilian sector. I do understand when you go back in and what General Johnson was saying, from a war college perspective, what level is that really at? And how does that equate to a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, or possibly even postdoctoral type courses? So we need to be able to, on both ends of the spectrum, is to have somebody in there that understands that language. So maybe there's that opportunity to hire a vet within your human resources office that specializes within that field, be able to help you understand those differences.
That's a great comment. So the burden was mostly on convincing HR.
Yes.
So if we had someone in HR that had some background, mm-hmm. we could do that.
Yes.
But if you could come to the microphone, please. Thank you.
I'll just add to that. We actually have I have an opening right now on my team to fill it, which is why I'm here today with for someone to focus on our veterans recruiting strategy. and our going out and leading our veterans recruiting efforts. And we also have a veterans advocacy leader for the firm that when we do have these questions that come up, even as it relates to people that we have on staff, that person's working with our veterans network to make sure that their development, their performance management, and everything is being taken care of. So it is extremely helpful. And one of the questions that I actually have is, and I think you answered it, is hiring now for a veterans recruiter to lead our strategy for our U.S. firm around veterans recruiting. Is there anything in particular, or what should I be looking for?
You're listening to Why Hire Veterans and Transitioning Military Members, a professional development seminar featuring Michelle Jones. Brought to you by the BEA STEM Global Competitiveness Conference and United States Army, where we stand at the intersection of America's future. Be sure to check out our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter.
I recommend that you're looking for, first of all, I like to say that most installations, no matter what service it is, they have, there are folks getting out of the military every 2 weeks. Either they're retiring or they're just getting out because their time and duty is done. If you can get the opportunity to go to those installations to talk to veterans that's about to get out about their experience and what you're looking for, that'll be helpful, number one. Number two is that there's a lot of veterans out there that understand the things. Once they know what you're looking for, it can be beneficial in trying to help you find the right people to fill the slots. And they're instrumental in coming to implement a plan for you to say, okay, I'll give you an example. When I was at the FBI, part of my job was to go out and sit on panels and go to different places, try to recruit and bring in more diversity into the FBI. So one of the things we did was we would go out to the different locations and say, this is what we're looking for, this is the skills we're looking for. But what I understood too, we were also trying to hire veterans as well. Because I think FBI has like about 6,000 veterans now in the FBI. So what we were trying to do is, because they had the skill sets that we were looking for, because they had the experience we were looking for and the leadership skills they were looking for, we had to come up with a plan and how we were going to do this. So first thing I said, well, first thing we can do is go to installations. We allow veterans can be on part of, put this team together of veterans that's in the organization, we can get on the installations in most cases and then talk to the folks that's about to get out. We talk to their families because the families are very supportive and they have skill sets too. It's not only looking at the veterans, we're also looking at the spouses, maybe some of their kids, that internships, all those type of things. So I think it's beneficial to actually go to those locations initially and then talk to those folks about, hey, this is what we're looking for and these folks have the skill sets. And some of the veterans that's getting out are recruiters anyway. They've done recruiting positions. They've recruited folks before, so they can help you with that that plan, that objective, if you will, that vision that you're trying to look for to try to bring those veterans in. And I think what better way to have an implementation plan of to hire veterans other than maybe a veteran?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
I wanted to get your. I was hoping you would say that. Okay. That was one of the things that I was. I hear both sides of it. Uh-huh. It should be a veteran versus, well, it doesn't really matter whether or not the person is a veteran as long as they have a passion and commitment to veteran hiring.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So I would prefer to have a veteran.
Okay.
So I'm glad you said that.
No problem.
And I will tap onto that to say that the veteran themselves, there's a vested interest in trying to get one of their battle buddies. Plugged into a system. We're committed to, and we understand because we've lived this life, you know, for a long time, and we really understand how those things work together. And if I'm sitting here, I may not know Terry from anybody else that I walk down the street, but I know that he's a colonel. I understand what that really means. I understand what he had to do to get there. I understand the jobs that he has, so I can better come sit at the table and be able to tell one of my partners in my office that's hiring somebody, this is what this person does.
Yep. Thank you.
I think that's a really tough question, and I don't believe there's a simple answer. But what I will tell you is right now, most organizations are taking a sort of a sustaining innovation approach. If there are different levels of innovation, the right one is a disruptive. And what I mean by that is we're trying to figure out how to do what we've always done, but we're doing it with a different person, in this case, a veteran. And I think when you do that, what, is anyone here from Lockheed Martin? So I'll use Lockheed Martin for an example. Lockheed Martin takes 30 of their veteran employees, and 1 hour every month, they screen veteran applications because they kind of understand it. So think about that. That's $4,500 a month being spent. You know, literally, they're not paying them extra, but they could be doing something else during that 1 hour. That is probably not the right approach because you want return on your investment. You're going to get it because the veterans brings all these traits and characteristics, but do you really want to do it that way? I think a better way to do it would be to maybe partner with our transition service offices on every post. Maybe go down to a recruiting station. Any service, if you want to know about what Army capabilities are there, a recruiter could tell you that. Better yet, go to the military enlistment processing station. Take somebody to lunch and just sit down and say, hey, there are 533 occupational skills in our military. It's a lot of stuff. I mean, I don't even know what they all are anymore, right? But I can generally tell you broadly what they can all do. So I have a possible solution, but it's not real simple. It's something that we just have to think about. But I appreciate your company putting effort on this.
Yeah, and I personally want to make the investment, so I appreciate you saying that, and that's something that I will commit to as in continuing my journey to understand the skill sets that veterans bring. I'm actually probably in the next few weeks going to go down to a recruiting office and try to set something up to learn more about it. Thank you.
What job is this? No, I'm just
kidding. Also, one of the things too, and I'll throw this out, and then we're going to go into transition into your presentation, General Johnson. Also, in that place and space, wherever you are located, in addition to the recruiters, in addition to going to the transitioning offices, but you have different veteran entities in the community. It could be the Veterans of Foreign Affairs, Foreign Wars, I'm sorry. It could be any of those things, looking out particularly during those times and periods where veterans are the most visible. So let's say the local chapter of this veteran organization is having, let's say, a career fair, or maybe not even that, a hiring fair, or they're having a holiday party, or where they get a draw of veterans from multiple generations, mind you, multiple ethnicities, genders, and all of that, where you say, okay, I'm looking for this type of person, and you develop a relationship with those community-based entities. Okay, because sometimes you may not get the right one going to transition, but all those options are there for you. It's not in one place only. And that's the thing, that's why I continue to say, it's not always the easiest way, but it pays off exponentially when you take different methods that typically you don't use. You will definitely get a better understanding, a better viewpoint, different people working in different ways, because the person at the transition office has this, like, these are people just coming out right now, versus those in veteran organizations. They've been out maybe 6 months to 7 years or 10 years. So different perspectives, and then you find that you're becoming more and more educated yourself, just by what you're being there. So we're gonna transition into...
Ms. Jones?
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to share a perspective and make a recommendation to both sides of the fence, the military, the Army, and to industry players here, because it's something that I I believe that we're fast approaching a tipping point when it comes to our capacity to do some of the things that we're going to require in future battles and future warfare. I'm going to tell you a story. As a young man who made a choice going to the military, I eventually ended up at Fort Gordon, Georgia. I was in the Signal Corps, 35B20 electronic instrument repair. This is when we were making the transition from vacuum tubes to integrated circuit boards. And the one thing that I remember that made a difference for me was the ability to go to the basement of Signal Towers and get on a education system that was sponsored by Hewlett-Packard and learn more about my craft, which eventually directly translated into a skill set that I've carried forward with me to this day. And the thing that I'm not really attuned to right now, but I think is a silver bullet in all of this, is reestablishing that type of infrastructure on our military posts, especially the ones associated with training soldiers in their profession, so that they can access some of the skill building things that hopefully will translate into a certification of some sort, which is always something on the resume that makes a difference. Also, it's something that in the industry workplace makes a difference, because those certifications are typically required for you to even hold the position. And I just don't have a good feel for where we are as an Army in that area. The other piece of that is, if industry wants to help, it's those types of things that you can create, and working with the Army, create a space where people by their own initiative can go and get those skills. Because one of the practical realities for most soldiers out there is just having the stability to even take advantage of going to a college or going to a tech school to get the education that's required. The reason why I say I started out with the tipping point is because the knuckle-dragging mode is fastly becoming obsolete. We're gonna have to have a force that has the intellectual capacity to deal with the complexities of future warfare. I've heard it said before, multi-domain. You know, that may, you know, sound great, but the infrastructure and the human capital that's required to implement something like that is huge. It's transformational. And I just don't see the infrastructure in place to make all of this happen. Even an infantry soldier is going to have to know how to deal with the robot, repair it, and make it do what it needs to do. And that is not going to be the same thing as executing procedures on an M4. So my only point to you is create the space.
Can I say something real quick?
Okay, yeah.
Create the space and the policy that supports industry bringing an infrastructure in place to help us get those skills that we need. And I believe that that will solve a lot of the issues associated with them coming out of the military and having something that's smart.
And I'm going to say this real quick, because I know we have to move. I know in San Antonio, Joint Base San Antonio, they have programs through Syracuse University, like the PMP program. But there are universities out there and programs where the universities take with what you're talking about, and soldiers in transition with certification, certain types of certification that they need. University of Syracuse, I know, is one of the programs, because, again, I am in that field or getting ready to transition to at some point. And I just found out about this program about a month ago. So you are right. The Army the military is beginning to move toward programs like what you're talking about with the university. So it is out there.
Thank you.
But to your point, you know, we're focused on the cybersecurity threat, and today, NYSERDA's Army is commissioning people from industry to be active duty, like Army agents, like, you know, sorry, lieutenant, because we know we can't build them faster. But we're doing it for now. So I'm going to transition, I'm going to flip the script a little bit, and I'm going to tell you why this is hard, and then I'm not going to leave you hanging. I'm going to give you a solution. So the first thing is, you're spending about $6 billion every year to hire veterans versus their civilian counterparts. It costs 70% more to hire a veteran than it does to hire a civilian. And why is that? Because we don't even know. We know what we're saying to you, but communication requires a sender and a receiver, and you're not receiving. So, and it was really awkward for me because I talked about what my teammates do to develop this data management system for NBA to track the performance of referees. But before I did that, I attended a few other interviews so I could have some insight, and I was absolutely amazed at how often academics use the word I did this, I did that. Veterans aren't used to that. As a matter of fact, I'm not used to it yet. So knowing how to interview is a skill that we just need to pick up so that we're not sound. I mean, I think when we interview with their companies and we talk about our team, I think that comes across in a positive way, but we're not about to too long. I think I've lived a normal life. Everybody knows me, and I've lived in extraordinary. And then the last point is, the 70% more just to hire veteran. So what I'm gonna do is talk to you about a solution. Under this company, PurePost, TransUnion is one of the company partners where we give a veteran a tool, a free tool, the company gets a tool, the veteran goes in, they enter their military experience using military speak. This database is based upon behavioral science, organizational science, and social science includes the whole system to translate this military speak into civilian speak in real time. I think if I didn't show you specific dollars, and you could see the references here, you wouldn't believe me. But just thinking about those three categories to hire veterans, this doesn't include things like just paying for them to come. We're probably cheap, but it's nice when you put us up in my hotel. We understand, this tool understands that there are three levels in every organization. There's the upper level, which is strategic. There's the middle level that's kind of operational. We want to be able to incorporate all of the things that a service member does. And based upon what you said, we ought to extend this for education, but of course with education, one of the challenges we're gonna have when this across the DOD is this thing called accreditation, right? You can get a PhD, but if it ain't from an accredited institution, the San Diego lab is one of this person, that's what it's called, right? So we look at all these different levels, and we don't get stuck in one level. And then we will take, we take these disadvantages of the veterans, no knowledge on our side about what civilian speaking, what no knowledge on your side about what military speak is. We capture these skills, which are common to both military and civilian. This system takes over 300,000 skill sets across civilian and military occupations. It correlates to 95% of all of the military occupational skills across all five services, if you include the Coast Guard industry. 95% correlates. These skills at these different levels are all the same. And if we made the connections from civilian skill to military skill, the correlations are just incredibly high. Right? If you did some statistical analysis on it, you would find that they would match. So what do? We look at how to create the resume, not only how to get that database so that the company, TransUnion, or your company that's a partner, can see who those people are with those required skills you're looking for, but also this database can tell the vet, look, here are the companies, our partners are putting this in, here are the companies that are looking for what you've got and you should be looking at them. And then, not only can we do that, we can provide your company with this tool with a strategy to acquire talent, how to onboard, how to train them. And maybe some of them need retraining because the last time they were operating at that level was 5 years ago. And what's the half-life of training? I don't know, it depends, right? If you do it every day, you don't lose it. You don't forget how to roll the ship. I don't think you forget how to swim. I need to test that out. I haven't been in a pool in a while. I mean, competitive, right? And the reason this all works is because there are three levels of transformation. Usually, most companies today are doing single loop transformation. They're using their old HR resources. They know they're acquiring talent, and they're trying to figure out how to fit the veteran into the whole system. See, the next step, the second loop transformation would include the fact that, look, there's got to be a way that a veteran has something we want, and I think people are realizing, companies are realizing that more today because us as veterans is a lot more honorable than those who served in like Vietnam. I mean, we did not treat our veterans very well, and nor was it relevant. And, oh, by the way, before, you didn't know if the person had a high school diploma. They said, I don't want to get some military today. I said, congratulations from high school. Or a high school recruit. 65% of our veterans have middle level skills. What I mean by that, they have high school diplomas, some college, and associates. So what? If you go to this website, whether you're corporate, or a veteran, you go to that website, first page pops out, big red box says, build me a profile. You start building a profile, you start putting in your military stuff, all your awards, all your military schooling. It does this magic based upon the boss. We'll create a civilian server, civilian resume with civilian words. So instead of company commander, it might say, district marketing manager or something like that. Check this out. I'm interested in your questions.
Thank you very much, Joe Johnson. We really appreciate it. Barring any last minute questions, what I do encourage you to do, please stop any of these gentlemen, continue the conversation in hallways throughout. Recommendations, some information, and hopefully a springboard to help you in the quest for hiring veterans. I think we all know, although the seminar was titled Why Hire Veterans in Transition, I think we all know, because I'm getting the heads up and down, why we should. The task or the challenge is how to get more veterans on board. With either existing platforms that you have, existing methods that you have, and or academic credential, be it an actual degree or certifications. So I want to thank the panel very much for their input, for their information, and their time. I want to thank you all for coming as well. Please remember to fill out the surveys, hand them to the gentleman that is sitting outside the doorway. And again, you can find the slides, the original slide at slideshare.net/CCGMAT. So any questions? If not, this concludes this particular session. I thank you very much and have a wonderful day and evening. And stay warm because it's a little chilly. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Why Hire Veterans and Transitioning Military Members, a professional development seminar presented by United States Army, featuring President and CEO of the Bones Theory Group, Michelle Jones. If you have enjoyed this presentation, be sure to attend the BEA STEM Global Competitiveness Conference. For more information on how you, your company, or organization can take part, visit www.bea.org. For college students, contact us at 410-244-7101.